You are listening to the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast. How much is a retweet worth?
Episode 111 of the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November the 1st, 2013. It's not the 1st at all. Today is November 10th of 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Frillo, and this is my marvelous brother, James Frillo.
Yes, I am marvelous, and that is for a couple reasons. Okay. Number one, I saw the Thor movie. Loved it.
Highly first of the Gen 2s. Right? No. I guess... Iron Man
was like, you know, Iron Man. But yeah, that's right. I thought it was good. I really liked it. I liked it a lot. I like what Marvel's bringing to the table.
Cool. I'm big seeing screens. It Tuesday, so I don't want you to ruin anything for me.
Okay.
Which means
actually,
there
is a news story about Marvel, actually.
Oh, nice.
Which we will talk about very shortly. But you're seeing it Tuesday? Okay, yeah. All I will say is that you'll probably love it.
Nice. See, we're doing our audience a favor this week. We won't ruin it for them quite yet because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Actually,
Go ahead.
We did a pretty good job last week of not ruining Ender's Game. I mean, we'd ruined it for weeks leading up to it, but the actual...
Yeah, I guess we didn't win.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about the book. It's all good. That's fine. The other reason why I am marvelous is I'm slowly but surely becoming the quantified man.
Mm. That's exciting.
As you know, for a while now, for over a year, I have over a year of continuous tracking of my steps.
Yep.
Which today I'm only at 7,400. Yesterday I did 20,000, and that was because I was at a high school retreat, and we played all sorts of games, so I'm very sore and tired today. Oh, man, I'm getting old. But as you know, for over a year, I've been tracking using this, like, $10 machine here.
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me where you get those.
Kmart.
Okay. Well, there's no Kmarts in California anymore, so great.
Target?
Well, sell them in Targets or Walmarts.
Really?
But anyways, you tell me. I want to hear your big news.
Well, if you need one, let me know. I see in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Because...
Oh, baby. A Fitbit one.
You lost it and it showed up on my doorstep.
Pretty much.
A late birthday present.
Nice. Happy birthday.
Which is super cool. So because I was away, I didn't actually get it until this afternoon.
Mm.
So I've been playing with it, trying to figure things out. I'm super looking forward to getting my sleep analyzed tonight. Because I actually had a WakeMate when that was a startup company. They got going before Kickstarter existed.
Yeah.
And so they had to figure out how to do all the funding themselves. I know, rough life. So anyway, so they came up with these bands to track your sleep. I don't remember if we've ever talked about this on the podcast because that was before all that.
I don't even know if you've ever told me about it at all.
Yeah, so it's WakeMate. Super cool idea. Basically what you do is it was a soft strap. Think of it like a watch. Would go on your non-dominant arm. And you would turn it on or something. How would it work? Yeah, it had like a little switch thing. Oh, I remember now. It had a switch and an app, and so it did two things which were really cool. The first was you would set an alarm, like, here's when I would like to wake up, okay? Like, say, 6:30 in the morning, something like that. And then what it would do is you would put it on and just take your phone and do whatever. And it connected to your phone via Bluetooth. And what it would do is it would track your sleep at night. And, you know, and tell you, like, here's when you moved, and it had all sorts of cool charts and graphs, and it would tell you, like, it would give you a sleep score, a composite score of, you know, their data, so that you can kind of tell, hey, here's how I did. And then here was the really, really, really interesting part, is they did studies, and they found that, you know, depending on the stage of sleep that you're in, when you wake up will influence how groggy and tired you are in the morning.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And they could tell which sleep cycle you were in because of your movements.
Right.
So the WakeMate was set up so that what would happen is 20 minutes prior to your alarm going off, right? So 6:10, essentially, it would really pay attention to what you were doing. And if you gave signs of being in one of the higher sleep cycles, I don't remember how to think about it, you know, instead of a lower deep sleep, a higher one,
right,
it would then do your alarm. At that
nice.
Time, not wait until 6:30, because they found that the cycles lasted somewhere in like a 20-minute range. So they're like, somewhere in there, we will hit your highest sleep cycle. And so, because I guess from what the way it works is, at first, you go down and it's down for a while, and then you come up, and then you're down for a little less time, and then you come up, and then you're down for a little less time. And so when it gets to the end, you know, after you've, quote, fully rested, those
yeah.
cycles are pretty quick. So they're like, so we can get one within a 20-minute block. So that was the theory, and you would wake up refreshed and rejuvenated and ready for the world.
Huh.
You know, kind of cool premise, right?
Right.
Well, what I found would happen with me, this was awesome, because, you know, it knew when it was your arm that was moving, and there were a couple mornings where I would, you know, I'd be sleeping, and, you know, you're not even thinking, it's early in the morning, you know how you just, like, you turn or something?
Yeah.
And my alarm would go off. I'm like, oh, dang it. You know? Oh, it's horrible. And so then, so I got to the point where I would feel myself, you know, I'd wake up and I'd be like, don't move. Don't move. Well, and the worst part is, you know, in Oregon, like wintertime, like now.
Yeah.
You do not know the difference between 6 in the morning and 3 in the morning in terms of sunlight.
Oh, no. Right.
So I was constantly like, it could have been 3 in the morning. I'm like, do not move. Do not move. And I would sit there stiff as a board, not yeah. wanting at 3 in the morning. You know, and every once in a while I'd be like, I gotta look. And I'd look at the clock. And I'd look and it'd be 3 in the morning. Or I'd look, the alarm goes off. I'm like,
oh.
No!
you lose.
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. It was kind of awesome. You're like, oh, man, this is killing me.
What's funny about it is that it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. You're awake. So it's saying it's time to go.
Yeah.
Don't fall back asleep.
Oh, it was so bad.
I can see emotionally why that'd be so stressful.
Alarm. Oh, so funny. And I knew I was doing it, too. And there was a part of me like, no, just let the system do its thing. If it goes off, it goes off. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, when it's 6 in the morning, you're not thinking clearly. You're just like, don't move.
Yeah.
Don't move. Oh, it was awesome. But then, as fate would have it, one day I moved and the alarm didn't go off. And I looked at the clock and I was within the 20-minute window.
Huh.
Right? And I was like, yeah, exactly. Oh, that's not good. 6:30 would come, alarm would go off. And I was like, that was weird, right? The next day, similar deal. Then I'm like shaking my wrist. Alarm doesn't go off. And so now I go in the debug mode, right? You're checking out all the forums. You're like, I'm testing it during the middle of the day. Like, I'm literally like going, okay, I'm going to set an alarm for 2 hours from now, and I'll set another alarm for an hour and 45 minutes from now, and then I'll just – and I'd leave it on the table, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'd go over and I'd start hitting it, and it wouldn't go off. And so got in touch with their – I only had it – I wasn't that long. It was maybe like 2 or 3 months, you know, not very long. Long enough to drive me nuts in terms of waking up in the morning.
Right.
So I got on, you know, contacted support and whatever, and they were like, oh, yeah, we'll ship you a new unit, no big deal. I literally had, like, one of the first runs of it. I mean, we're talking startup.
Right.
Similar. I don't know. I tend to buy these things. What can I say? And
I get it.
So they sent me a new one. It didn't even last 3 weeks. And,
awesome.
Yeah, and that was where I was like, okay, I'm done. It in concept, totally awesome. But I do like not having to worry about keeping my arm, you know,
yeah.
It's totally still in the morning. I kind of like that, and I couldn't mentally get over that one. And, so I had to give up on it. So, sad.
You know what one of the greatest feelings in the world is, though? Waking up, having to go to the bathroom,
your alarm hasn't gone off yet, worrying that it's 6:15 and you have to get up at 6:30 because you know you're done. Like, if you get up, you got 15 minutes of either just being like laying in bed but needing to go to the bathroom, or getting up and just starting your day. But the best feeling is like worrying that it's 6:15, looking at your watch, realizing it's 2:15, and you can totally get up, go to the bathroom, and then come back to sleep feeling totally rested. Oh, that's awesome. That's the best. I love that.
Yeah, for me, mine's like a 2-hour window. If it's like after 4 a.m., I'm like, I'm awake, whatever. I'll just go play SimCity for a couple hours.
To me, 6 o'clock, about a half an hour before I'm supposed to wake up is my cutoff. Well, I'm willing to risk another sleep cycle. if it's 5:59, I'm going back to sleep.
Nice. I'm going to try. I'm going to pee really fast. Get back in bed. Yeah, but I'm excited to try it again. I guess our dad's been using it for sleep stuff, and
yeah, he seems liking.
The tracking is honestly what I was most interested in. I didn't care about if I could have figured out a way to turn off the alarm, which there might have been. But that was the other weird part, is it stopped tracking my data too.
Oh,
It would connect to the phone to set it, you know, giving me hope. And then for whatever reason, the next morning it would not reestablish the connection.
That's awful.
And so all data would be lost, and to which I'm just, you know, that crushes my heart inside, because I'm like, there's data that I can't capture. You know, it's one thing to just never have gotten it. It's another to be like, no, I captured it, and I cannot access it now. This hurts my soul.
That is the worst thing. That's like when your hard drive dies, and you know that the data's there. It just won't connect to your computer anymore. You're like, how much is this worth?
Yeah, it's bad. So I'm excited about the Fitbit. I'll probably be able to give a full review in a couple weeks.
Awesome.
I don't fully trust it for obvious reasons, so I'm going to keep my pedometer for a little while and do them both in tandem just to see. And it's really going to drive me nuts if they're not within 10% of each other.
Right.
Because then I'm going to be like, oh, shoot.
Everything I've read, it's your pedometer that's wrong, not the Fitbit.
Well, we'll see.
Well, we will see.
Probably.
But
I really hope that they agree, because
that would be nice. That would be
really nice. Because I had two pedometers once that did not agree, and it was horrible.
That would drive me nuts.
Anyways.
So, you know what, though? As much as I want to talk about the Fitbit
one, it's tech related, but you know.
It is. But let's, you know, we got stuff to talk about today, man.
We got news.
It's happening. Cool. So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera corporation's dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, last but not least, the technology that they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he wants to throw your way so that he doesn't get in trouble at work.
Yep. I work for HP.
Nice. I like it.
But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. It's I feel like I'm dreaming.
just letting the gravity of that statement sink in.
Awesome. So if you want to follow us at the week, see all sorts of cool updates and find out things about what's going on in our life and see our witticisms and whatnot, you can follow us on the internet. We've got a couple of places to go. My Twitter, if you want to follow me there, is at Matthew D. Furlow, and my Instagram is at NextWiggin4. Both great places to check out comments and words and stuff, pictures. They're worth 1,000 words, so it's like a much better character cap than what Twitter offers. Well, because a picture's worth 1,000 words, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got you. Did I mention that I was at a high school retreat and I played a lot of video games? I went to bed this morning. Let's just start with that. After an epic pillow fight. Yeah. Which is not totally manly, but trust me, it was.
An epic what?
Pillow fight.
Was there pieces of soap in it?
No, it was about one cabin going after another cabin, which turned out actually to be, there's a word for this, it was a setup And so it was an ambush. It was pretty awesome.
You know, I'll be honest.
As an adult, I was like, I can't officially participate or hear any of your plans are. But this is awesome. Do it.
You do. Go for it. No, you know, the thing with pillow fights is, and you don't really understand this, is that, like, most pillows nowadays, like, you get a dude swinging it as hard as he can, as fast as he can, you can knock somebody over with a pillow, man. They got a little bit of mass behind them.
I will admit to this on this podcast. I may have fantasized about doing a pillow fight as if I were Spider-Man and just laying the hurt on people and, like, super. I was like, dude, how awesome that would be if that was just like, oh, pillow coming, wing, I'm out of the way, and then I'm just like, taking out legs left and right. And we get to the end of the scene, because that's what it is, and I'm like, everyone else is on the ground bloody, and I'm like, that's right, don't mess with me in a pillow fight.
So,
and I'm like, what am I talking about? This is like a Christian camp. I probably shouldn't. Yeah. Probably so I had to let that. I had to let that dream go. And let that dream go.
Yeah.
But I did fantasize about it. I'll admit
don't
it.
Worry. I got the beatings taken care of this weekend.
Yeah.
My Spidey sense didn't tingle.
afterwards.
Thankfully, my common sense tingled and I didn't swing back.
Yeah.
But. Oh man, good times. So yeah, did you want to give your?
Oh yeah, I do. At James Furlow, jamesfurlow.com.
Cool. And if you want to check out the rest of the web show and all of our links and clicks, we put all the articles on there. We put links to the show cuts and the show podcast and the YouTube video and all that stuff. Go to furlowbros.com. It's great resource, interesting, lots of fun. Check her out. So yeah. Guess what? It's kind of cool.
Chicken butt.
Guess what the biggest hard drive you can buy now is? Single hard drive.
One Googleplex.
One Googleplex. No.
Six terabytes. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. It's great. A single hard drive now, because you know. How it works is, like, hard drive has a disk on it, yeah, and so you can, like, drive it up. And for a long time, your 4 gigs were sort of, like, we're really pushing the limit, because what they were doing
four
is...
4 gigs or...
4 terabytes. Because what they were doing is they'd have, like, you know how hard drives work? They're actually really cool. So, like, you want to keep...
I think so. Tell me.
So what you want to do is you want to get the... you want to have the reader head stay really, really super close to the disk, but you can't have it too close to the disk. Or it'll scratch and can't have it too far. So how they keep it at the right distance is when the disk gets spun up really fast, it creates its own little air cushion right on top of it, and then they put the reader down like an aerodynamic head, and it just kind of gets caught in that air tunnel path, and it keeps it at the exact right height.
That's convenient.
Yeah, it is cool. And so, like, one of the I can't remember what I think the biggest you can have is a. That they're making is a half terabyte disk per side. So it's each disk is a half terabyte, 500 gigs. And then for 1 terabyte, you put a reader on the top and the bottom. For 4 terabytes, you put 4 disks in a row. Well, Western Digital took it up a notch, and they did 6 disks now that are all going simultaneously, which is 12 reader heads. They were running into a little bit of a problem where the aerodynamics within it, everything's a little bit too close, things moving a little bit too fast, and it's all a little bit crazy. So they came up with this clever idea where they'd hermetically seal them so they're airtight.
Oh my gosh.
And so to make sure that they, like, can get up to the speeds that they need to be, they're now filled with helium. Incredibly inert, and yeah, so this is like...
So does that matter... Is it then dependent on your altitude or your, temperatures and stuff like that? I mean, it sounds like they're trying to create the atmosphere inside is clearly really important.
I'm sure it does.
Is it any of that stuff? I know with toner laser jet printers, there's like, they act weird in tropical weather.
Yeah,
because it's all based on static electricity. Is how it works with the lasers. It creates a static charge.
All right.
And so when it gets way too humid, they start to do weird things. And, you know, so they're constantly testing it, and they have all these different chambers to try to get them so that, you know, they can sense what it is and recalibrate on the fly.
Right. I'm sure it has sensors inside of it. Okay. Huh. I'm actually reading the article again. So they were saying that the 4 terabyte models use 5 platters and this one uses 7 platters. I got that wrong. Sorry. My brain was not working properly.
Does it take longer to read because it's so big? Because it's kind of like, where's the data at? Well, we have a lot of space to overlook.
Yeah, actually, I mean, you know, if it needs to, if it knows the location of something, like if you tell it like it's here, you know, it's weird. So like,
oh, it's just the index is bigger, so it,
it's all about the
as
index.
As long as it takes it to get through the index, got it.
Right. And one of the big things that, you know, Microsoft has
which
been working on.
Which probably only slows down if you have it filled with 6 terabytes of data.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I'm cool.
One of the big things that Windows has been working on over the last, since Windows Vista, has been better indexing so that they move faster. If you've ever noticed that the search algorithms on Windows after XP got like get exponentially better every generation.
Oh my gosh, XP was so bad it was a joke.
Oh yeah, it was stupid.
Yeah, Windows 7 is pretty good.
Oh yeah, it's great. I really like it. I mean, at work we have these huge files that they, you know, it indexes once, and the big trick, you know what the biggest difference was between XP and Vista? XP didn't index anything. It was an unorganized index, whereas they finally started indexing it, and now it moves faster, surprise, surprise. Yeah, very cool. So what's really cool about this stuff though is that like when you talk about your RAID files, because now your RAID setups, because those are all like they got all the different configurations. But you know now you're talking like if you have like a RAID 6, where you got 6 hard drives in there. Now you're talking about 36 terabytes on a single rack. Oh man, it's a lot of terabytes. I don't know. I have no use for this kind of stuff, but I wish I did because it's cool. Like, I could download my entire iTunes library, probably should, just for backup's sake, and I don't think it'd fit on a terabyte disk. I mean, I don't have that much data, but I wish I did.
Well, yeah, but you let Apple back it up for you.
Well, yeah, but you shouldn't, because there's no guarantee that it'll all be there when it's
supposed
to. Sometimes
Apple gets crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting contract thing. I've actually read a couple of articles where they're like, they don't guarantee that if you like that iCloud will back up everything forever. What they guarantee is as long as they have a license for it, you can re-download it whenever you want. So I'm like, but that's not the same thing.
And they're like, we know.
Yeah, we're aware.
We know.
Actually, that's kind of an annoyance with me right now because they're crazy. I gotta call them, but it's not that important to the show. Not that interesting to talk about.
Okay, dude, that's pretty cool though. You know, yeah. Making hard drive. I thought the world was going SSD.
It
but,
is.
You know, well, then gotta have massive storage at some point in time.
Well, it's the thing is the reality of it is that disk drives are just so much further ahead than silicon drives, but the thing is that they're caching them so fast. I mean, they've got. I was at the. I'm looking for a really cheap external drive with a SATA cable for a project I'm working on, and I went to the store and they had a terabyte SSDs there that you could just like off the shelf buy, plug in. I mean, and you think about it, it's like when did SSDs be like? I feel like we talked about. I feel like we were doing the podcast when Apple introduced the first Air with SSDs and only. And I feel like we talked about that. I know we talked about that. It was a big deal. So it's been less than 2 years since SSDs have really been, like, you know, in the field, like, going crazy. And they're already up to a terabyte. It's crazy. You know, pretty soon here. Now, obviously, they're crazy expensive. But 5 years from now, there's going to be no reason to buy a terabyte, you know, drive. And at some point you get way ahead, you know, you get so far beyond consumerism. It's like, who's going to buy a 6 terabyte drive? Nobody needs it. You know, most of us have iPads with 64 gigs on them if we're getting crazy.
That we paid an extra $100 for.
Oh yeah. And you know, it's, and nobody buys them because they don't need them. Turns out Google's right. And you know, so I don't know. I'm, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they sell terribly. Well, especially the phones. The phones, the 64-gig phones don't sell at all.
Yeah, well, I agree. 32 is the right size. But I don't know. My thought, if I ever got an iPad, which who knows, I'm holding out. Someday I will. But I was like, oh, bigger screen, bigger apps, give me a little bit bigger storage. But I could see how people either go like 16, maybe 32, or 128.
You know,
just don't go 64.
It's funny. I go the other direction. I have a 64-gig iPhone and a 16-gig iPad mini, and I'm perfectly happy with it.
Weird.
Yeah. You know what? That's unfair. I can't say I'm perfectly happy with it. The iPad mini was bought for me, and I'm not going to look a gift horse in the face. But
fair enough.
I always want more storage. If I can add it, I'd get it.
We're that generation.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not quite totally asset light yet.
Yeah.
But, hey, that's cool. That's very cool. 16 gigs. Dang.
Six gigs. 6 terabytes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. What in the world was I talking about?
Oh,
I was
small.
Your iPad. I was pulling from your iPad.
I gotcha.
6 terabytes is significantly bigger than 16 gigabytes.
Significantly.
I won't do the math on how much bigger, but we all know it's bigger.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. That's very cool. Also cool.
Yeah.
Is a new show coming, thanks to the partnership of Marvel and Netflix.
Oh,
do you remember, man, this was like a month ago, maybe even 2 months ago, when it was, we were listening to or watching that speech by, I don't know, I know him as Lex Luthor, or the guy from...
The name Tom Clancy came to mind, but that's not
nope,
right.
Nope. Not even close.
Geez. What is his name?
He was also
from House of Cards.
Yep, House of Cards.
That's what this is all about.
We know his name. We know his name.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
He gave that speech. You'll look it up while I keep talking, and then
Kevin
just
Spacey.
Say it when you get it. Boom. He gave that speech about how the model has changed, and that's one of the reasons why they went with Netflix, because they didn't have to try to prove out something in a single pilot. They could just tell a story for as long as the story lasted and get as creative as they wanted. And you know what I mean? We remember that.
Right.
We don't have to rehash it. We're starting to see that like actually happen. So Marvel came out with S.H.I.E.L.D., which is an actual TV show on television that had your traditional pilot and is now doing traditional shows, of which you can watch on Hulu. And I like it. It's superhero, right? So it's not like super, super drama for a superhero TV show.
Nobody's really watching it as their biggest problem, but in principle,
really?
I understand. Yeah. Okay. The ratings are terrible.
I like it.
Not good news.
Bummer. Yeah. Well, I mean,
don't get too excited. What?
I know. It's not the best show in the world, but, that's okay. It's all right. Anyways, doesn't matter. Marvel, who is owned by Disney, who has plenty of money, is teaming up with Netflix to do something even bigger. Okay?
Yeah.
Think they're going to do the Avengers thing all over again, but on a smaller scale.
Okay.
This is kind of awesome. They're working with Netflix to create 13-episode series of 4 new or different superheroes. Okay?
Okay.
Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage. And now we can see why they're doing smaller ones, because I honestly only recognize Daredevil.
Yeah. And
even then I'm like,
I only know him as, you know what? That you, oh gosh, I can't believe they're going to make him Batman. I mean, I realize that this is like the world's smallest problems, but Ben Affleck was Daredevil. That was awful. That was awful. Didn't he get his chance? Didn't he fail? Why are we going through this again? This is going to be a heartbreak. I can already tell.
Because he's matured a little bit. I don't know. Well, part of it is they had to pick someone who was clearly different.
Right.
Otherwise, there's too many comparisons. And, I mean, he doesn't have a choice. There's a ton of comparisons that are going to happen. And I think part of their hope is that he can handle it. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. I agree with you. You know, whatever.
It's not that important.
The point is, they're doing Daredevil. They're doing Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
That's who they're going to star, right? No, that's a person. Luke Cage and Iron Fist, who I'll honestly, I don't recognize them because I don't follow Marvel stuff. And so, but I will now because Disney's awesome. Yeah. So anyways, they're doing 13 episodes each that they're going to produce, you know, with Netflix, and they're going to do the whole, like, they're going to put them out there. And then when that's done, they're going to put together yet another miniseries called The Defenders, where they all come together and guess what they do? Defend the world.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, aren't so, they, so they're doing they're it again all, on a smaller scale with Netflix.
They're all Marvel characters. I wonder if they're – I mean, I wonder if the big thing here is that, you know – because the big thing with the Avengers is there's like a bazillion of them. I think Marvel and Disney are just trying to figure out how to get as many characters out there as possible and so that they all can cameo on everything else and they create a big – which is essentially what they did with the Avengers comic books. It's like all kind of like – everybody goes and does their own thing and then comes over here and it's – you know, and like you were like you were frustrated by, I won't use the word whining, about the idea of like you're you know, you're cross referencing comic books where in order to figure out what happened in this series, you have to go over to here to read this series. Now you have to buy two
that's
series.
True.
And that's what they're gonna do is they're gonna be like they're gonna be all these
Yeah, they're like, oh bummer.
Yeah, exactly. And they're gonna be all these characters that you're like, you know, they're gonna be these side characters that everybody else can go, oh man, it's so much better if only you knew. It's, you know, I was like Ender's Game, I felt kind of weird because I did that, and I hate it when people do that, but I was like, you know, like, oh, you think this character is cool? Just wait, man. He ends up doing this, and blah, 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 blah. You know, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Why are you even saying this? But you can tell that that's where they're going. That's, you know, that's the goal, make you fall in love with a bunch of characters, and then...
Well, it's working on me, okay?
Man. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that, but it just proves out, it's just, again, you know, Marvel is on to something really cool here, and they got the deep pockets of Disney to pull it off. And yeah. And they're following this exact model that Kevin Spacey talked about in his, you know, in his speech, where it's like, you know what, we can tell stories that are really cool and really flexible. We don't have to worry about the next season. We're going to tell as much of a story as it makes sense, and we're going to go from there. And, you know, yeah, we've obviously have more story in the back pocket if it makes sense to do it, but,
yeah.
You know. We're just going. It's awesome.
It is very cool. I, you know, Netflix, man. Netflix is so obviously where it's going. I mean, every month you read more stories about cable cutters and, you know, just kind of where it's going and how this is all the dynamic of all this. And it's just so clear that it's like, you know, 10 years from now, cable is so overwrought, which is awesome. I'm glad to hear it because. You know why? It's because I hate commercials. Which I realized that the long and short of this is that advertising doesn't go away and that commercials will come back and they'll find their way to
pass. And it helps keep your content reasonably priced. Come
it's
on,
true.
Come on.
Well, or at least
you trade your time instead of dollars.
Yeah, or at least it keeps
you're more
the,
willing to part with that.
Yeah. That's terrifying.
Think about it.
Yeah. You know what? I don't want to think about it because I'll get all depressed.
Well, that's why, I mean, well, okay. They could probably, this would be really interesting if they made it like an in-app purchase type thing. So we'll give you the first half of the story for free. And if you like it, pay up $1.99 to figure out what happens. You know what? If you don't really like it and you're not interested in the story, no big deal. You don't have to pay. Just like an in-app purchase on a game. Of course, the really good ones are like, look, the entire game is free. Don't worry about it. But if you want to take a shortcut or go ahead, yeah, pay up.
Yeah.
You know, they give you those options. Or here's some sort of trinket that does nothing other than when others see you, they go, whoa, you paid money for that, loser.
Yeah, except you know what's weird about that? Is that, like, that is the definition of the fashion industry, and it's one of the most profitable industries out there. So I'm not exactly sure it's a terrible strategy. Oh, you paid that much for that hat? I'm going to go buy one. Where'd you get it? Macy's? Okay.
Yeah, really.
But,
yeah. Anyways, yeah, it's cool. I'm excited to see what it is, even if it's horrible. I don't care. I'm probably going to watch the whole thing anyways. But
hey, man.
It's okay. And what will be really interesting to see is if they do exactly what you said, right? Which I think they will because they're super smart about this, where they do drop references and stuff. it's kind of funny, like in S.H.I.E.L.D., they reference the New York event all the time. All the time. It's like at least once per episode they reference it. To which you're like, okay, fine, you know, I get it. I have to know what that is, and, you know, that's cool. But I'm still like, you know, or they'll talk about, you know, the big guys, which are, you know, the stars of the Avengers. Like Thor, awesome movie, go see it, recommend it on Tuesday. And, you know, and so it'll be cool if they start inserting these other references into it. What would be really awesome, and here's what I hope, is you get shows like S.H.I.E.L.D. where they've actually already been dropping references, and I don't even know it because, you know, they're setting up other stuff. And, yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And you know, if they do, like you said, make cameos or appearances or play some sort of role in the next Avengers movie. I don't know. I forgot to look at when the timing is and all this. But you know what I mean, where it all starts to just come together and coalesce. And if they do a really well job of wrapping it all together, not just, oh, we're going to reference the New York event from every single one. Right. You know, don't do a one-way reference. Start doing two-way references. That's when it gets super intriguing, and, you know, that's like Lord of the Rings level stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a pretty good bar for.
What I've always liked is the idea of, you know, a world where it's, you know, you've got your main thing, and then you can always go deeper. You can always go deeper. You know, I think that's where they're. I think that's where what they're doing right now, and I you know. What I dislike is when, in order to follow one story, you have to go back and get the entire backstory on another story. I like it better when, like, here's the highlights. This is a really cool character. Just trust me. And then it turns out they have an entire backstory that you can find out about if you have the time and patience, which I normally don't, which is why I don't want to be required to watch an entire other, you know, season in order to understand.
Fair enough.
But, yeah. That's how it goes. Kind of. So.
Okay. Speaking of movies, I'm reminded of the Monty Python movie. Which one is it? Is Holy Grail? Is that the one where he kills the guy, but not really? And he says, I'm not quite dead yet?
I'm not quite dead yet, yes. The Black Knight. Yeah, I'm not quite dead yet.
The Black Knight, speaking of.
It's just. Yeah, I know. It's just a veteran. There, you're defeated. No, I'm not. Okay, now I'm going to watch that movie. Thanks a lot, James.
Well, thankfully, so, you don't have to watch it because it's playing out in real life right now. With, instead of, dare we say, a Black Knight.
Instead of the Black Knight, it's the Blackberry. So, Blackberry's not quite dead yet.
Not quite. It's unbelievable.
I know.
I was so ready for this to be over.
I know. I was getting excited, but they decided to fire their CEO and got a bazillion dollar cash injection. I guess it was technically just $1 billion, not a bazillion. They got rid of Thorsten Himes, and they're looking for a replacement. John S. Chen, former CEO of Sybase. He's their interim CEO. He's their ICEO.
Interim CEO. Gotcha. Yeah.
Maybe he's the next Steve Lin Jobs.
Maybe.
Yeah, nope. So they got this new turnaround strategy. They got $1 billion extra cashola. They're ready to turn it around. Nobody really knows specifically why this happened. You know, it's I've read a couple of articles, and basically it's almost like nobody cares to figure out. Like, they're just kind of like, really, BlackBerry? Really? Okay. Awesome. Also, it's kind of come out of the woodworks that Apple did talk to them about spending a little cashola. And basically, Apple came over and said, look, we think your patents are worth something, but nothing else, so we'll buy your patents. And they were like, no, we're not going to break up the deal. And then Apple said, then you're not going to sell your patents. Walked away.
All right.
That's exciting, yeah.
At least not to them. At least not to them. It wouldn't be awesome if, like, a company like Google just came in for a mercy kill. That'd be so sweet. If they're just like, oh, yeah, we'll totally buy your company. Yeah, we'll do it. Own them for a year and then just
Just fire everybody.
Like, that was good, guys. Yeah. You're welcome.
Nice game.
Playing the long game. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't figure out what their plan is. You know, that's to me is like
they have, it's easy. It's easy. John S. Chen's job is simple: sell the company. And if he can't do it, they're bringing in a quote real CEO to sell the company. It's easy.
You think
they're done?
But they're why? Done. What's the point? So what is this? Did they just decide that they couldn't? Did they decide that they couldn't get the money that they thought they deserved? And so John Chen's going to come in and try to shake things up enough to get a higher price point? Is this they're just trying to, now they're trying to detail the car because they're like, it's worth more than this, we need to get more.
You know, I mean, we talked about Fairfax and, you know, and the owner of that, and he was like, he was a huge cheerleader. And so if they couldn't get it done, who could? You know, other than in the next year, they'll slide just that much further. And, you know, I honestly, having been in a company that has gone through the transition of CEOs and kind of uncertainty about its future, you know, HP's benefit was that it was a $300 billion a year in revenue company, you know, that's making $120 billion a year in profit.
Right.
That's pretty good. But
I mean, as far as these things go, I'm going to say 120.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, they're a huge company with, and they make a tremendous amount of money.
Hundreds of billions of awesome dollars.
Yes.
I've been watching How I Met Your Mother, and they say the word awesome a lot, and I've picked up on it, which is okay. I don't see who. You know, knowing the turmoil that HP went through, and HP, you know, fundamentally got good products, has good people working for them. You know, it was kind of like, oh, we're no longer first in the market. We're bumped down to second or third.
Right.
You know, that was our biggest complaint, right? And that's just not – now, granted, you know, we were grappling with, has the industry changed its trends on us? Are we in trouble here?
Right.
You know, and to some degree, we're still grappling with those questions, and that's okay. We're only year three of a five-year turnaround, so we're cool. But it's like BlackBerry doesn't have such type of plans. They're still going through the turmoil. But they're falling so fast. It's kind of like
they're already so low.
Can they figure out their next steps in enough time? Yeah. And with one of their, like I said, one of their biggest cheerleaders backing out of the deal for some reason, you know. And maybe it said it somewhere, and I just failed to find that article. But it's kind of like, dude, I don't know. I just don't see. They will probably get bought, and it will be a shadow of the company we used to know.
Yeah, and I think at this point the only reason we care is because of that. It's at this point it is nothing but drama. That this is just fun.
Yeah.
The company doesn't matter.
It's a car crash. We gotta watch it.
And now it's just like it's astounding because it's like when we went through this dance with Palm. Obviously, HP finally bought them. There were buyers. There were people who cared. Like it had some sort of an impact, and you could tell just by the fact that the players that were involved and the amount of money that was being offered for them, the general consensus was, well, this is still an important company with an important product, and this is a good time to buy. The problem with BlackBerry is that they're so insignificant. Their products are so unimportant in the market that nobody will buy them. Like, they're not worth anything. Well, that's what's astounding about it is it's like they're just not worth anything, or they're not worth nearly as much as they're offering, and really and truly they're underwater. They would cost anybody who bought them would cost them more than they're worth.
How did it work? It was I remember their stock dropped a little bit, and their market cap. It was something small, like $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
Was it. After the $1 billion cash infusion. So they basically sat there and said, we could do the math here. If your market cap, we're saying your company is worth $1.2 billion, that is inclusive of the $100 of the $1 billion cash you have, we can therefore do the math and say the rest of your company is not worth a lot.
Right.
That's essentially the math that you're able to do. And you're just like, no, you're not. You guys are worth nothing. And if they're – eventually their stock will slide even more. And I guarantee you that at one point in time that number will flip and – or that ratio will flip. And you'll be like, awesome. You guys are worth less. You have somehow made cash worth less
than right.
it's in your possession. Or,
yeah, which is – that's the definition of being underwater. And like, what do you do at that point?
Yeah.
What do you do at that point? Now, the thing is that like with – you know, with this whole company and everything that they're doing – you just sit there and you go, it's like, I read people all the time, commenters on the internet, which, let's be real, what do they know? They talk about, like, how, like, I use the BlackBerry, you know, operating system. I like it, and it's a good operating system, and I wish people would use it because it's good. But you sit there and you go, like, really? Are you trying to tell me that somehow BlackBerry has come up with an operating system and hardware, a combination of the both, that really is superior to the iPhone 5S with iOS 7 or, you know, or the Nexus 5 with you know, Android 4.4, you really are going to make the argument at this point that BlackBerry has something that is significantly better than either of those two operating systems? It just isn't easy. It's, you know, it's incredible to believe. It's incredible to believe that you would even make that comparison between Windows Phone 8 and, you know, BlackBerry 10. It's like,
I mean, at one point in time, we thought Nintendo was out of the race, and they came up with a true blue ocean strategy, which the definition of that is, you know, a place where there are no other competitors, right? It's a blue ocean. It's open. It's wild and free. Go for it, you know, with their motion control. But, and here's the problem that Nintendo ran into, and what BlackBerry, if they manage to pull that off, is that their competitors will quickly react.
Yeah, what in the world could BlackBerry do at this point? That, and you sit there and you go, and this is the thing that gets me most, is that Android
holograms. That would be
yeah,
cool.
I know.
That would be cool.
The problem at this point is, like, from an operating system perspective, it's like anything done. Android could adapt to anything that BlackBerry does at the drop of a hat. And Google obviously would do that if they thought there was any advantage to it. Samsung would do that if they thought there was any advantage. I mean, it's like Google at this point, it's interesting to see what IP they're willing to go after without, you know, in regards to laws. But Samsung's still in the, like, whatever. We will – if it glistens, we're going to steal it. And, I mean, they're as bad as it comes. And they've not even touched the BlackBerry operating system, which means to me it's like, you know, I sit there and I go, like, you know, I don't understand. To me – the only people that are going to be sitting there saying that BlackBerry, the new BlackBerry operating systems should turn the company around because they're actually good operating systems, are people that have either incredibly pigeonholed needs, or they're people that have been stuck on BlackBerry forever and never really gave anything else a good what for. Because, you know, I sit there and I go, like, it's incredible for me to believe. I can't believe it. I cannot believe the idea that, you know, given where they are, like you said, they're almost not, they've almost made money worthless. The heck is that? How did you do that?
By the way, I did look this up. I was a little unfair. Okay.
Okay.
Just BlackBerry had an existing $1.5 billion in cash, and they got an additional $1 billion in cash.
Nice.
That's 2.5. Their market cap is actually 3.3. Nice. So
there's a $700 million discrepancy.
Yeah.
That's a lot
I was not fair to them. They're not quite at a billion, but it's not just like a couple hundred million.
Yeah. Well, but the difference is only a couple hundred million. I mean, you know, it's $700 million. I mean, it's half of $1 billion.
And for all we know, they might have lost a lot of cash since that last update.
Well, that's the thing, is they're burning money. I mean, they can't fire people fast enough.
Are they losing money here? Let's see here. Let's look at the old income statement here. I love this kind of stuff. Oh yeah, How does this work? Oh, that was a year ago. Yeah, they lost 6.4 million. Okay, now I can say this: 646 hundred million dollars.
646 million dollars.
No. This is okay. Look, this is hard to read. It's 646,000, but it's in thousands.
Right. So that's $646 million.
Okay, there we go.
That's over a half a billion dollars.
Yes. But they got like $2.5 billion in cash, so
yeah. But their market cap is only—I mean, we're talking—they lost almost as much money as the excess that they, you know, the company is worth above their.
I see what you're saying.
You know, it's just like, I mean, I don't know how you define underwater in this sort of a situation, because I, you know, obviously underwater when you're talking about houses is easy to define. It's what you can sell the house for versus what you owe, and if you owe more than what you can sell it for, you're underwater.
Well, they claim that their where is it? So their total liabilities are, oh no, here it is, their net. It's $6 billion. That's what they think it is, their total net worth. Just from a pure, if you were to go out and sell everything tomorrow, that's what would be left over.
$6 billion.
So just let's think about that, right? Market cap, 3.3. If we went and sold everything tomorrow, we'd get about twice that much. That sounds a little underwater to me. A little bit.
Yeah.
Unless you truly believe, and this will be really fun when we talk about the Bird Company in a little bit here, who now has all publicly available information about them. You know, unless you believe that they truly have something coming down the pipe, you know, that will be worth more later on, you know what I mean? And that's the only thing that keeps you going and say, yeah, I'll totally invest in that because I truly believe that they're going to come up with something amazing that will put those assets to work and create something of value above and beyond that $6 billion.
Right.
And no one else in the world has recognized it yet. And yes, that does exist, and we will talk about that in a little bit, which maybe we should just talk about it now. But interesting comparison. Let's do it. So let's keep the berry that is black in the back of your mind, right? And all the numbers and you like that? Who's not in the black, they are black. So keep that in mind because – this week, a certain bird company called Twitter.
Tweet.
Yes, they went public this week.
Yeah, they did.
In case you missed that tweet this week. I know. I could go all night. I have had such little sleep. I could do this. So they're public. Yay!
Ooh, that's exciting.
They managed to not do it like Facebook did. Yay!
Well, and there's a distinct reason for it. It's because Facebook did what they did on purpose. They wanted people to buy high so that everybody with early options could sell and make a bunch of money.
Yeah, or as they said, they tried to maximize the returns of their IPO or you know, how much they get out of it, right? Because the way it works, again, we'll revisit this because it's always good to understand how it works. With an IPO... initially, there is no money, and the company, the organization, sells shares and gets that cash, you know, just like, here you go. You know, so if you sell one share for $100, that company gets the $100. Now, someone else traded that cash for the share, and they have the share now. And if they ever want to get their money back, they have to sell it to somebody else. But you'll notice that the company never sees any more money.
Right.
So even if, theoretically, they sell that share, Twitter sells a share for $100 to a banker in this case, and then someone from the public, John Q. Normal, comes along and says, you know what? I actually think Twitter's going to be awesome, and I'm willing to pay you $150 for that share. Right? Not bad. 50% return. Give me the share. And so Investor Jane is like, all right, here you go. Investor Jane gets the $150. Twitter never sees that. Okay?
Right.
And that is exactly what happened on Thursday, I believe, when Twitter went public. Twitter sold it, all the shares, at a certain price. It was in the 20s, wasn't it, or 30s? You know, not terribly high. I probably have the number somewhere here. $26 was what it was. And so Twitter sold 705 million shares at $26. Yep. And, you know, pretty cool. Good job, guys. And so that, does it say what it was? Doesn't matter. You can do the math quickly in your head if you're good at that. And so, so they did that. And so they got all that cash. But then what happened is, and this typically is really important to watch the first day of trading, which is why it was such a crazy big deal with Facebook, because they had problems and you couldn't trade, which makes it like, oh, what are they actually worth?
Right.
So what it is then that's the first opportunity that the institutional investors, the news junkies, whatever, had an opportunity to buy the shares. And so it's kind of like whatever it settles at is really what investors thought it was worth. And
right.
So in this particular case, it shot up to $45.10, a 73.5% increase. Or another way to think about that, if you multiply that times 705,000, you know, million shares, another $1 billion.
Boom.
That Twitter will never see, because it was those initial investors, aka bankers, who got that, you know, nice little pop from it. Well, you know, it probably turned a lot of hands or whatever. So so that's kind of what happened with Twitter. They launched publicly at 26. Now, Facebook was the one where, like you said, they did the initial one. It was like at $35 or 40. I mean, it was pretty high. And so all those initial ones were a good pop. But then the price immediately dropped down way below. And people were like, oh, no, investors don't have nearly as much confidence as Facebook because of ads and stuff. And then anyone who was smart or had extra money laying around that was not already invested in their 401k, which is not my situation, bought some stock and said, you know what, this is wrong. You know, they've got some potential future. Then it ended up going up later. Notice what I said there. You should only be investing in single stocks as fun money, cash to throw away, not as an actual investment strategy. If you really want to invest, get an index fund, fund your 401k in a Roth IRA. Do not buy single stocks as an investment strategy. Don't do it, even if you think you know better.
And if you remember me talking, because I'm, you know, I'm pretty smart too, I told everybody, wait till it bottoms out and then buy. It bottomed out like around 10 bucks, and it's already up above its IPO price. You would have like quadrupled your money if you just listened to us. We know
By the
what
way, did you buy
about.
Did you get in on it?
No, because...
Good job. That's how firmly I believe in it. I don't care if the bet would have worked out. It's that you lose in the long term. I'm passionate about this.
I know you.
Anyways,
you know, and then you look at Google's stock price every once in a while, and you're just like, are you?
You know,
are you positive about that? I mean, I realize
the problem. Here's the problem is you and me. Or people like us, you don't just stop at one.
No.
Once you've set up the accounts and you know how it all works, you're like our mom, right? She's like, which I love you, Mom, because I know you're listening to this. And it's awesome because you do it with fun money, which is why it's okay. But she buys multiple stocks. She can't just do the every once in a while where she's like, yes, I know.
Yeah,
which I think
really...
she actually bought like Google and she bought Apple and she did okay. So it's, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
And it was with fun money. Let me clarify. Fun money. Awesome. I will one day be doing that with fun money, not as an investment strategy.
Right.
Okay. So, back to Twitter. What's interesting about this, right, is that they're worth 31 – their market cap is $31.8 billion, significantly more than BlackBerry's, not anywhere near what – Facebook's is, or Apple, or Google, not even Microsoft, but you know those are big ones. Let's see here, the Twitter, WITTER, using Yahoo Finance for those of you who care. I'm giving them a second chance. Let's see here, Twitter Inc. Let's just see, because it should already have their latest income statement. Ooh, it's grayed out. Never mind. I was kind of hoping. if I could have seen it, what you would have seen for their net income would have been a negative number. Huh. So here's a company, like BlackBerry, technically is not making money. Unlike BlackBerry, they've never demonstrated the ability to make money. Okay? All right? I mean, let's just compare these two. But for some reason, Twitter is valued at 10 times the amount as BlackBerry. Okay? And that, and I'm sure if I could see their balance sheet, we would see that their market cap is significantly more than what their balance sheet is. Okay? Yeah. You know, their net.
Yeah. Right?
So if you sold all of their assets today, you wouldn't make back what the stock is worth. So here's the situation. Two companies, both losing money, but yet you have one who clearly, when you look at the balance sheet and all this other stuff, not worth a lot, and another that seems to have all this potential. And the reason why is because investors and people like you and me truly think that Twitter will figure out how to do ads and do them well, and will figure out how to make money by doing it the best way you can, adding value to the world.
You know what? I can't understand. I can't. Okay, I'm going to get controversial here. I'm going to go with my gut instinct.
And well, okay, let me finish my thought, and then you can go. Whereas BlackBerry is valued what they're valued at because nobody, including myself, has confidence that they will figure out how to make money and provide something of value to the world.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
There's my thesis statement. Boom. And we're done.
Yeah. Moving on. you know, and this is going to be a good tie-in with the next one, the next story that we're going to have to talk about, because I've been saying forever. Everybody keeps talking about how, you know, what's going to turn Facebook into the next MySpace? What's going to happen when Facebook finally like collapses? You know, they're king of the hill right now, but MySpace was the unstoppable juggernaut. All of a sudden, this little upstart nobody ever heard of called the Facebook started. You know,
with a clean design that you couldn't customize and make your own.
Yeah, it's, who would want
play
that?
For college kids.
starts to take off and, you know, doing some real business and the whole boom, Facebook happens. And I've been saying for a long time that I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Facebook's going to stick around where others won't.
Yeah.
And the question that I have.
Remember that you were super proud because you got on the Armstrong and Getty television or radio show and told them exactly that. I remember that. I actually have the recording. We could listen to it.
Nice. So yeah, and the thing is that I think the people over at the Twitter are smart, but I don't get why Twitter is a bigger deal than Facebook. I don't think it is. I don't think people are treating it like it is. But I still am like, what's the thing here? What do we? Really? Like, I don't know.
You don't understand. So you get the – okay, let me understand what you're saying. You understand the value that Facebook is providing and why they're going to stick around for the long haul.
Yes.
Whereas you don't necessarily understand the value that Twitter is providing and why they'll stick around for the long haul.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you want to know why? Actually, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me why. I actually
get the feeling that I don't get as much feedback on Twitter. One of the reasons I'm moving over to Instagram, I'm using
Instagram?
That more, is because people give up their likes so easy on Instagram. Everybody everybody likes stuff like it's like, I like it. What?
Nothing.
Okay.
You're good.
And it's just like I sit there
and
I go
that
like.
Comic. What was it? The pencil drawing comic?
Zen Pencil?
Zen Pencil. They did a comic on that.
Yeah.
I read it, where the guy was making fun of the meth addict, and then the point of the comic was that he was just addicted to likes, as that guy was addicted to meth.
Exactly. Which I think
that's
was
you.
A little harsh. But it's, you know, it's funny. It's like I sit there and I go, I don't get very much feedback on Twitter. I really don't. I don't get very many likes. I don't get very many. And what I find is that what I'll do is I'll comment Like, I go one of two directions. I don't post anything directly to Facebook anymore. What I do is if it's a spoken text, if it's a text thought, I post it to Twitter. One of the reasons is because it keeps me to 140 characters or less, and as I can be rather long-winded, that prevents me from boring all my friends. Yeah, I know.
Long-winded?
Yeah, exactly. And so, and whereas, you know, and if I want to post a picture, I don't post it to Facebook, I post it to Instagram, and then that also forwards to Facebook. Uh-huh. But when I post, like, a text thought to Twitter, I don't have anybody like it, I don't have anybody respond to it, nobody even knows it exists. Whereas on Facebook, I get a bunch of likes, I get comments and stuff, like, I get social engagement. And I wonder, like, I realize that, like, celebs and stuff really like the Twitter. And I use it. I like it. I don't know. I read people's stuff on it. But I just don't – I don't get the kind of engagement on it where I do other services.
So let me ask you this. When you say you use it and you like it, which particular streams did you have in mind when you were saying that, or users? Were you thinking of individuals or companies or entertainers?
Entertainers. Okay. It's kind of like Vine.
Which I think is an important distinction there.
Right. To me, Vine is all about the comedians. Those are like all of my friends that do Vines. I'm sort of like, you people are boring. Get out of my stream. But now I can't like defriend them because that would make me feel bad. I like skip their videos. But it's like, whereas it's the people that are like posting, like the comedians that are doing their like 6 second videos. I'll just laugh and laugh and laugh. And it's super funny. Twitter, it's like, you know, you've got your like your actual celebs and stuff, and as you mentioned, the Armstrong and Getty show. I'll do another crazy shout out, where it's like they're the ones that I follow. I read their stuff, and I'll read our like family and stuff. And actually, I'm actually surprised. Lisa's not bad. She's pretty. She can, you know, she doesn't bore me too bad. Which is like a really big compliment because everything bores me online.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. My experience has been I agree with you. I don't get a ton of like favorites and retweets and stuff on Twitter, though I do get a lot of people who mention it in real life. Hey, I saw you posted that on Twitter.
Like, well, right.
Thanks for the favorite.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like on Facebook, you get the likes and the comments, and then they never mention it here face to face. I'm like, what the heck? Come on. And then surprisingly, I do get a fairly decent amount of interaction on Google+, and I have a ton of random people following me all the time. I don't fully understand it, but I'm okay.
Yeah, Google Plus is a weird one. I mean, and now they're like, now you got to do the Google+ comment systems all tied in with YouTube and stuff, and it's like. It's a weird world
that works, but since we, you know, all this is on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
So, which kind of makes sense, but I don't know. I understand what you're saying. And so, you know, to get back to the heart of your question, why is it worth $30 billion? And, you know, and so what if they put an ad on there? You know, and I wonder if, you know, Facebook really will own the personal connections. You know, and Twitter's done some stuff where it's like now they're streamed, they open up the photos for you instead of making you tap on them to see them.
Which I like
so
that.
People
that's
will
nice.
Be a little bit more inclined. Yeah, yeah. Except it doesn't work with Instagram, but you know, whatever. That's not Twitter's problem. Or yeah, not their fault, I should say.
Thanks
it
a
is
lot,
their problem.
Facebook. Yeah.
But yeah. Way to compete. So you know, so there's that, but like you said, I don't know if it will ever become the friend connected network like you want from Facebook, which is bad for people like you and me, where
right.
that's where the majority of our social interaction is going to come from.
Right.
I honestly believe, and we just have to be okay with this because this is the way it is. Twitter is a it really is more of a – it's not a conversation. It's a way for organizations and information sources, whether they're entertainers or news outlets or other companies, to disseminate information very quickly. to other people. And right. I just think that's the main use case for it. Or if you're watching a live event, it's an opportunity glean information from experts, which again is disseminating information.
Right. And a lot of people talk about the fact that Twitter is all about, most people get their news from their Twitter feeds nowadays.
Yeah. And so I think that, like with the podcast, yeah, sure, we're going to continue to tweet out what we're doing here. But I just think for you and me, unfortunately, we have Facebook-like expectations, Facebook-esque, Facebook-ish expectations, and it just doesn't work that way. And we have to be okay with that. And for us, it really is more of I'm going to read this, and sure, I'll favorite some things that I enjoy, and I will use it to find news stories and learn interesting things or to just, kill some time. But your expectation can't be, I'm going to tweet this sucker out and I'm going to get tons of likes. No, that's going to come on Facebook because that's where our, you and me, normal, regular people, that's where our sphere of influence and interaction really comes from.
But
that hurts. That hurts. It does hurt to hear that.
This does bring in another interesting point in all of this is that Facebook in their last quarterly earnings, now that they're public and they have to share all this information, did announce the fact that that teens aren't using their service anymore. They're still signed up. They're still logging in, but they're not actually using it that much, which is horrifying to Facebook investors. And so my big question is, does that matter?
So I spent the weekend with a bunch of high schoolers, aka teenagers.
Oh, baby.
Just out of curiosity, where are they at? Since we're going down this path here, Yahoo Finance. Okay, Yahoo, here's your feedback. Your drop down is way too slow. Be like Google and do it instantly.
Yeah, come on now.
Please, it's still... Just give it to me. We all know what I want. I spelled it out. Okay, hold up. Oh, man, this was supposed to be a seamless transition, Yahoo's ruining it for me. Okay, you get one more shot. Otherwise, I'm switching back. All right, that was it. Let's see how fast Google does it. I know they'll be fast at it. Finance.google.com. I'm now supporting them. You had me. You had me for half an hour. Watch this. Facebook. Drop down. See, that's how it should work. They, just in case you wanted to know, are worth $115
billion. $115
billion. Billion dollars. That's not bad.
No.
That's not bad at all. And if we're looking at their financials, income statement, last quarter, they made 2.5. Okay, I gotta do this math here. It's in millions, so $2.5 billion. That's pretty good.
That's not bad at all. You're making some bucks.
No, wait. That's diluted weighted average. No, that's not right. That sounded way too high. Income. All right, net income. Here we go. All right. $425 million. Still positive. Still makes you question the $115 billion market cap.
Yeah.
But anyways, okay, so Facebook, I was talking to teens this weekend, and there's a bunch of them where they're definitely on Instagram. There's a ton of them that are on Snapchat.
Now, see, this is what drives me nuts.
And what was interesting, which I thought was super interesting, is I was watching this one girl. She took this picture. We were trying to do this like spin cups upright thing, which was super fun, and I can't believe I spent a half hour doing it. But anyways, it was just one of those like, man, if anyone was watching this, be like, wow, what simpletons. They're trying to spin a cup. But anyways, it was fun, trust me. She took this photo, and at first she wanted to upload it to Facebook because that's what you do, right? But the iPhone, this is on iPhone, the app was so slow, which I've noticed it's actually gotten significantly worse in the last like 3 months. She was like, oh, dumb, switched over to Snapchat, uploaded it to all of her friends there, and finished. And I went, whoa,
from Snapchat?
That was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was like she originally wanted to do Facebook because she knew she'd get the likes and all that, and got frustrated with the app because it wasn't loading, and then switched over to another service. And you know what? Sure. Next time she may go back to Facebook, but man, that's the start of something right there.
So, you know, I'll be honest, yeah. Number one, that's bad news for Facebook. They have got to lighten the load of their app. It's getting big again, and it's like every once in a while they'll come up with an update that makes it smoother and faster, and then they'll slowly add features back that make it slower. Come on, guys, get your app together. But the thing is,
and I'm only rocking a 4S. Come on, guys.
Come on, now.
You gotta be reasonable here.
I love it when you get investors and stuff, or you talk to. I love adults who don't use any of these things, and you listen to these people. And Facebook's definitely feeling the heat from Instagram and Snapchat. And you're like, okay, for starters, if Instagram is doing well, that's good news for Facebook, since they own them completely and utterly. They are a Facebook subsidiary. Like, why in the world does anybody think that's a bad thing? That's fantastic. You're losing market share to your own company. They're disrupting themselves.
Google Video is really taking a hit to YouTube. It's horrible out there.
Exactly. This is crazy. How do you people not understand that that's like a good thing for Facebook? That's the sort of thing that Facebook needs to be doing more of, creating new companies, creating new products, and rebranding them as different things so that and absorbing other companies. You know, Snapchat's an interesting use case, though, because it's like one of the big problems that you have with Snapchat is it's like, what is Snapchat going to do eventually? How are they going to commoditize what they do? Because it's one thing that I think that the other thing that Facebook doesn't necessarily like shy away from is it's like they sit there, as long as we have a reason to exist and we have a way to commoditize that, why would we go into – why would we spend tons and tons and tons of money on a venture that is not going to do us much good, when the reality of it is that Snapchat's going to need somewhere to put their servers eventually. They're going to need somewhere to, like, you know, if they get big enough.
Oh, come on. You could see how they do their advertising model, right?
How would they do their advertising?
Well, you just have – it's easy. You get sponsors and who upload a picture of some sort, and they pay, you know, per second. You know, so if they're like, we want this up for 15 seconds, you know, or whatever, you make it whatever that minimum is, and they just pay per open, you know. So if someone opens it up, charge them. If they never open it, fine. And if they, and maybe it's one of those where you pay to have it available to be open for like a month or maybe a day, I don't know. And so it just sits there in your stream, and if you never open it, no big deal. And if you do, cool. And Snapchat needs to do a really, really, really good job of working with advertisers to say, like, let's make these suckers good so that they know they're going to enjoy it when they open it up.
Yeah,
I can see that. You'd make a ton of money, you know, and you would be curious just like I would. Oh, man, what's this picture they did? I want to know what Oreo did this time. Come on.
It's actually.
And then I tap it, look at it for 2 seconds, go, ah. Or I go, ha, that's awesome. Cool.
That would be.
You move on with your life. 2 seconds. Yeah, Oreo pays them 30 cents. No big deal. Times a billion users.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And okay. Just think, and they're just like, don't worry, you don't pay unless they tap. Oh, right. That's
and
beautiful.
You pay for the duration that they pay attention to. So if Nissan comes up with some ad and I look at it and go, oh, this is stupid, and I'm off of it in a second, Nissan doesn't pay for that at all. If I want to be a jerk to Nissan,
or at least at the very least, okay, fine.
Seconds.
Yeah, see, or at the very least,
yeah.
Well, I don't know if you – that might be – at the very least you say, look, if they tap on it, even for half a second, you're paying your 30 cents or whatever.
Yeah.
But we will let you know how long they held on to it for. And you don't just give them average data, you know, give them a little bit more. You know, so you can do some pretty cool stats with that. And I think that would be – that would be super powerful from an advertiser's perspective. You know, obviously they're not going to attract everybody, but there will be some out there who go, yeah, let's do it. And
sure.
Yeah, I think it could be good. I think it could be good. So that's how I would make money if I were them. And their quality is, you know, keeping the quality high is what's important, and keeping it interesting. And that kind of stuff can go viral too, right? Let's say we'll keep with the Oreo example, that they do something that is genuinely awesome. You know, that every single friend who sees it, like, dude, did you see that Oreo Snapchat ad? And if it's on everyone's phone, it's just sitting in the queue. You know, yeah. They'll be like, oh, yeah, let me check it out. Beep, done. You know, and all of a sudden the sucker goes viral and gets super expensive really fast. And they're totally cool with that.
Yeah.
I can see that. I'm sending you a Snapchat. Look at the Oreo ad.
Yeah. But, well, and that's the other weird part about it. Snapchat's weird, man. Snapchat's so weird. I still use it, and I still don't get it. And I still am astounded by the number of pictures of cats that I get off of it.
But you'll appreciate this, though. I was having another conversation with yet another student, and she was like, you know, I feel like I should be on Twitter or something, because we were talking about it going in public. And I was talking about it with another adult. Who, by the way, his job, he's in the newspaper business, so it's all about disseminating news. So he finds it very valuable, and you know what I mean? And for what he does, and unlike you, he gets a lot of favorites and retweets and interactions, but that's because he's an information source. Yeah. That's what he does. So anyways, you know, this girl was like, you know, is that something I should join? She's like, I don't know. Is it important? She's like, I feel like it is. You hear it all over the place. And we were both like, nope, don't worry about it. It's all good. Like, unless you're really interested in news, no, don't join. Just continue using Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. That's plenty for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was our advice to her.
And that's the other thing is that I still think Facebook has a place as a general
repository. Which means I lost a follower, which is kind of sad.
Jeez, what are you doing, James? You know, I think Facebook definitely has a place as a repository of information and of your connectiveness and stuff. It's just such a central network, and they got so many good engineers there. I just don't see, you know, they've got so much going for them. I know it's crazy, but it's like, this is so interesting seeing where all this is going, because it's just like, you know, number one, there's no destination. There's no, like, you know, I get the feeling that, you know, in this world, man, as soon as you get comfortable, you're dead. You know, as soon as you think you've gotten there, it's over. You know, look at Microsoft. So
if you're not improving, you're falling behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're a monopoly, then it doesn't matter.
Exactly. And the only way to really be, you know, the only way to not be disrupted by somebody else is to disrupt yourself. That's the other, you know, big principle, is that anybody thinks that the final version of Facebook is the final version of Facebook is wrong. The reason why, this is the big thing, this is what I think people don't understand, is that everybody says, you know, Facebook is going to finally get taken down, is going to be beat. And I guess I should clarify this as a bigger idea, but it's like, I do agree that eventually the Facebook that we know and love and hate today, that in its final form will be something completely different and probably very minimalized compared to what it is. I think the company as a whole and what they do and all of their subsidiaries and how they make money and the, you know, just the brain trust that's there, I think that stays around for a long time. They just figure out different things to do with what they have, because they're an internet technology company. They're not a website design company. There's so much more than that. There's such a big, you know, tank.
But as long as
they can stay flexible and mobile, man, they are gonna be able to chase down whatever new threat comes along. And one of the big reasons why Facebook is so, you know, feature, you know, everybody talks about the fact that it's like parents are part of the problem that kids have. You're like, well, I don't know what to do about that. Other than to say that having everybody on a single website is a good thing for certain services and tasks, communicating, you know, remote logins, you know, everybody who uses Facebook as a commenting system, that's a great thing. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not what you'd like to think of as their bread and butter, but it's still good for them. And then it's like people who are like, it's just too. There's too many features. It's just like it doesn't have any clarity of purpose. And you sit there and go, that's because they can do everything that anybody else can do. And anytime somebody comes up with something that isn't even remotely threatening, they come up with a better service and app, you know, and maybe people don't use it. You know, Poke, for example, doesn't get used like Snapchat does, but it still exists. It still is it's how they roll, man. They just, you know, they're the Samsung of the internet business. And anything you can do, I can do better. And they, you know, they just, you know, I don't know. Twitter's interesting because it's like they're very focused on what they do, and they came out with Vine, and it's cool and everything, but Facebook, anything you can do, I can do better, and updated Instagram to, you know, to do what Vine does, but better. And I don't know. I look at all this and I go, my gut instinct is still that Facebook has a better chance than Twitter does. You know, maybe Twitter's finally, maybe there's just nothing else out there that
there's
really,
room for two.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. You know, that is very true. I don't mean to say that they're, you know, there's a room for a lot. That is the one thing that I think we're proving, is that we have an unbelievable attention span for a lot of really, really low attention span activities. We can do 30 things as long as we only have to do them for a few seconds at a time. Now, that's the other thing, is that it's really nice to not, like, I only get, like, you know, I get two finger scrolls through all of my different services, and I'm bored, you know, and I'm moving on to the next one.
Awesome? All right, Apple, listen up. Or Google, whatever. Here's what I want. I want to create some sort of automated process, I guess, where what I wanted to do is, like, when I wake up in the morning, I have certain apps that I always open. Not always in the same order, but, you know, it could be in the same order, right?
Yeah.
And here's what I want it to do. I want it to have me hit a button and say, wake up routine or something. And it opens up the first app, and then it knows I've got, you know, 12 others in the background that are all also updating and getting ready in the background. And I do that one thing, check my email, look real quick. All right, next. Boom. The next one loads up. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to search for it. It's already loaded, ready to go. All right, cool. Check the tweet stream real quick. Next. Boom. Go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love it to just, you know, just fly through them and then have my, like, time to, you know, let's kill some time real quick function or series. And it goes through, you know, a couple games or some news articles, and it knows the apps, and it keeps them in the order, and it's all auto-updated. And in, like you said, in 30 seconds, I can get through all this stuff, and it just loads it all real fast and gets it going. That'd be awesome. That'd be so cool.
That would be awesome.
I would love that. There you go. Apple, Android, there's an idea for you. Make it so.
That's yours. You can have it.
Yeah, that's for free.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just
you don't have to know. That's okay.
I don't have to know. It's good, but it's fun to know about all this stuff.
So, I don't know. I think it's time to let's switch gears here.
Okay.
Done. Let's get out of the digital world and step into
the physical
world.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's right. If I'm looking at the remaining of our articles, I think they're all related to the physical world.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So let's start with crystals.
Rubies.
You know they are? No.
Rubies.
Sapphire.
No, they're sapphires. It's different. Apple made a little bit of an investment this week in a company that makes sapphire glass. Sapphire glass is pretty cool. It's like way stronger and harder more scratch resistant, less crack prone than Gorilla Glass, which is the crazy awesome glass that was launched really and truly with the advent of the iPhone.
That's what your so Gorilla Glass is what the screen is made of, but Sapphire is what your camera lens is made out of, right?
Yeah. They moved over to Sapphire for the camera lens because it doesn't scratch. So you can, you know, where your screen will get broken and scratch, the Sapphire, like the lens, like almost nobody has problems with the lens on their phone. And Apple got even crazier this last go around because they made the little thumbprint scanners out of Sapphire. And so the question everybody's been asking is, you know, when's Apple going to make the whole thing out of Sapphire? You know, you got this super material, why not? And nobody had a really good answer for that. It's actually pretty common to make watches for, like, really super high-end watches. They'll make them out of sapphire glass. So it's possible to do large sheets of glass, or, you know, large pieces. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's just been very expensive. And so it's obviously anytime Apple does anything, everybody's like, what does it mean? You know,
what does it all mean? Yeah. Double rainbow.
Exactly. So let's see. GT is the name of the company. GT Advanced Technologies rallied on Tuesday. More speaking of stocks, because they got a giant cash infusion from Apple. Let's read this. The company said Monday it's reached a deal with Apple where GT will produce sapphire material at an Apple facility in Mesa, Arizona, more made in America. As part of the agreement, Apple will provide GT with a loan of about $578 million. Woo! Half a bit. Nothing. You know what that's about?
Apple.
That's like how much nearly as much as BlackBerry lost last quarter.
Oh, I love it.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Which GT will pay back over 5 years starting in 2015. This multi-year agreement requires a minimum level of capacity, but doesn't guarantee volumes.
Deal in Apple's favor.
Yeah, and Corning, the makers of Gorilla Glass, everybody knew something was up because they signed this big old deal like a few months back with Samsung to make Gorilla Glass for them, and everybody was
right.
Like, ooh, this big deal, you know, like all along they've been kind of them and Apple have been buddy, and all of a sudden they're moving over to help Samsung out, and now it's like everybody's like, okay, so Apple's gonna keep with the best of the glass. They're gonna move away from Corning's Gorilla Glass and move over to the sapphire. But this is the thing. Everybody's like, an obvious direction to go with this would be the iPhone 6 or 7 or 7S, B, whatever.
Or
since sapphire has most commonly been developed and used for watch faces, they're making an investment for watch faces. I don't think that's I think this is an interesting one because it's like it could go either way from what I've read. They're like basically this is enough of a capital investment for GT Technologies to be able advanced technologies to be able to produce it's enough money. Especially if they leverage it a little bit, which is weird. Leverage your debt in order to get more debt. If they do that, they can then get a big enough capital investment to get the equipment to be able to produce enough glass to produce glass for the next generation iPhone.
Yeah, I feel like if that's what they were doing, Apple would have just given it to them.
Yeah, you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, Apple, come on. $578 million, that's nothing.
So what
they would have sat there and said, "Yeah, don't worry about it. Here's $2 billion."
So what do you think this is?
I don't know. I'm with you, man. I think it's the watch.
Yeah,
that's enough to me. Where it's like that gets it going. They don't know. They have no clue what the demand is. That could handle a lot, but.
Yeah, and the other like you said, this is the interesting part of it's the requires a minimum level of capacity, but doesn't guarantee volumes. Which is to say, they can produce X amount, but Apple isn't necessarily going to order that amount if it's not popular. And that makes sense. That quote alone, I think, is your biggest indicator. You know, if nothing else, it's Apple's. You know, it's obviously going to be in Apple's favor no matter what. They're not going to. Why we're giving you $500 million?
Oh, dude! If I were the GT, I'd be like, yeah, please, whatever you want, man. We'll play because this probably won't turn out bad. We'll take a bet on you.
Right. Exactly. It's not shocking that was the terms of the deal, but it's interesting. It's fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what Apple decides to.
And they're going to start it in 2015, huh?
They're going to start the payback in 2015, which means that they've got 2 years of making money to start turning a profit.
Well, that was my question. Is Apple giving them a year to make money before they start paying back, or is it 2 years? You know what I mean? Like, you know, if Apple's usually, you know, the way a loan works is you get it, you don't pay anything that first month, and then it's after that month, you know, technically like, okay, you've lived in it for a year per se, you know, if you're doing housing, or you live in it for a month, and now you'll pay the mortgage on that month, you know, that kind of thing. And I wonder if, you know, if using that same logic, Apple's like, use, you know, whatever you're going to use it for a year, and then we'll start the payback, you know, afterwards. And that would be pretty cool, because that would mean that whatever they're doing, we'll see the fruits of it next year, instead of saying, oh, we're got a 2-year agreement thing going on. You know what
this
I mean?
Would,
it's just kind of like
be my guess.
Take a year, make some money before you got to worry about payments. And,
you know what I want? You know, I want to know what my guess is? I'm willing to guess that whatever equipment that they have, they're going to be in the same ballpark as the semicon industry. They're going to be in the same ballpark as everybody. What you do is you figure out what equipment you want, and when you order it, like let's say you're going to open up a fab, you're going to open up a new factory, a foundry. something completely different. you're going to open up a new foundry, whatever. There's a certain amount of time that it takes to do that, to be able to you make the order, you tell the company that makes this equipment, we want this equipment and we're going to order from you. Now, all that starts to put together, you start to assemble all the pieces into your factory, into your foundry, whatever. And once it's all there and it's different capacities, then you also need to, you know, get everything validated, get everything checked off, everything's working, boom. So from the day that you can put the down payment on all of these things, make your first, you know, give money to the different companies that, you know, that need this stuff, to the day that you open this new capacity, that takes a certain amount of time. And depending on what the process is, it can take anywhere from 3 months to a year. So I get to imagine that this capital investment is about putting money down on capacity that's going to be required a year from now on top of their current capacity. So my question is this okay. Something that is Apple is doing this? You know, I think the reason why they're not going to have to start paying back the loan is because really and truly the capacity that Apple needs is 2 years down in the roadmap. So the question is, so the question to me is, and I think what you actually are going to end up seeing is, you now see GT Advanced Technologies are making Sapphire for Apple, whether it's the fingerprint scanner or the back of the glass. And, you know, in classic Apple's, you know, fashion, it's like with the liquid metal stuff, you know, they're still having small runs done with that material as they vetted out. They started out doing the crystal on the small, tiny piece of glass that really and truly Gorilla Glass would work fine there. So, you know, it was a pretty safe bet. Now they're going with a bigger piece of glass, a little bit bigger deal. It can't really be Gorilla Glass. It's got to be Sapphire. So now it's a bigger thing. I think before they get to the point where it's the full-on the iPhone's got thing, I got to believe, I would not shock me at all if they go to, you know, if they do something intermediary, that they already have the capacity to. For those of you that are listening and not watching, I held up my wrist as though I was indicating a watch.
I saw it.
You know what? I appreciate that. And
should have said something.
Yeah. And so
let's do it again.
Yeah. So the watch, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that intermediary piece of glass, something that's, you know, a little bit bigger, but doesn't require as much capacity. You know, and something that they can probably already do in the volumes that Apple's gonna require it. And I sit there and what the other interesting part about all this is, they're manufacturing the glass in America, not in China, which means if Foxconn, who does all the assembly, all the final assembly, basically what would have to happen is you manufacture the glass in America, you'd ship it to China with all the taxes included, and then you'd build it in the iPhone, you put all the iPhones back onto a boat and ship them back to America, which, you know, is another interesting piece of this. Whereas if Apple's really trying to expand their, you know, made in America idea and shipping costs are going up and it makes sense to build stuff in America, I don't know, maybe they are, you know, maybe they're going to make the iWatch in America. You know, I don't know. It's an interesting question that's going on here. What do they do mean? But the cool part about it is Sapphire Glass definitely going to be a bigger part of our lives, which is nice because the sooner we can get to materials that don't break, but we can see through, the better.
And I think Apple is right to focus on watches, given a recent I will call it an informal poll done by Jessica Lesson, and she found that early adopters pick wearable watches over glasses by 4-1. How about that? Which is not to say it's super impressive, because it was like 38% said they wanted watches, where only 10% said they wanted glasses. So we're not talking like huge numbers either way. But it's 4-1. We can do math. Or it's really almost 4-1. And so they asked a whole bunch of other questions. Like they said, 62% said they thought it was possible that they would own a smartwatch in the next 5 years. So that's higher, whereas only 41% thought it would be possible that they'll own a smart glass device in the next 5 years, which is kind of, I'm not 100% sure if that's a commentary on, do they think the technology will be there in 5 years,
or
do they think, you know, do they actually find it useful? So not sure. And then another question they asked, who again, these are quite savvy or extremely tech savvy.
Self-described.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, similar 38-12 type of stuff. So they were focusing on it from an app developer standpoint. They're like, where do you focus on? But I think it's interesting, at least right now, consumers, again, it's hard to separate, you know, which they, you know, why they're saying that, because they didn't ask. But we can, you know, there's some combination of people believe that the watches, the technology for the watches will be consumer ready, I guess. More so than the glasses in the next 5 years. And there's probably some of, they just think they'll be more useful than glasses. Having tried the glasses for, you know, half an hour or so, pretty darn cool. I could see it being very useful. But there's also some overlapping, you know, especially with notifications, there's overlapping functionality and use cases there. And if you're really interested in notifications, man, a watch works just as well. You don't need the glasses. And so it will start to open up some different conversations of, you know, if you only got, it'd be a hard problem. If you only got $500 to spend, which one do you get?
Honestly, you know, to me, the big question is which ones, you know, to me, the obvious answer, okay. I like the idea of the smartwatch for two reasons. Number one, it's because as far as the quantified me goes, I think it's less intrusive and therefore will be, you know, It's inherently less intrusive and therefore will be more seamless sooner than the glasses. And the other reason is because I've always liked the fashion statement of watches. Ironically, I haven't worn one since middle school, but I've always liked them. And actually, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the watches that I like the most are expensive, and I just can't justify the money. But if Apple does it, I will justify it because, you know, why not?
You're a fanboy.
YOLO, you only live once. But the thing is, as far as the quantified me, as far as the quantified me goes, what I see is far more important than what my wrist does. So I think long term, okay. 10, 20 years, I think glasses win 100 times out of, you know, out of 90 out of 100 times. You're going to need a glasses more than watch, especially considering the fact that if, you know, eventually it gets to the point where you put glasses on and then you look at your wristwatch and it just superimposes the image of a watch over your wrist and now all those notifications that you want, you know, whatever, like, and you know, it's like glasses become.
I like it, man. When you dream big. That's sweet.
And you know, and I sit there and I go, glasses are the obvious, you know, final destination of this. And
totally.
And I shrug my shoulders and go, you know, Google's long term makes more sense, but short term, the seamlessness, the less intrusive, you know, one is going to be the watch.
But you also got to think like, you know. You also got to know that by making the watch, you're going to learn a ton about how people interact with wearables, about how to get the technology smaller. You know, you sit there and it's like, you know, it's this weird paradox, right? Where it's like, because we did these intermediate steps, we were actually able to do that long-term step faster
right.
by not focusing on it and instead answering these smaller questions. And somehow this one became feasible all of a sudden. Similar to where, if you think about it, you know, Apple, that story that we all love to talk about, you know, with Jobs, where he was talking about the iPad. They actually started on that one first, right? They weren't focused on a phone. They were focused on the iPad and making that work, and then went, you know what? We can make a phone.
Yeah.
You know, and which is kind of an awesome story, and who knows how true that really is, given the way Jobs tells stories. But that idea of, you know, but
nobody's
you focus on the watch, and you might sit there and go, you know what? We can make a pair of glasses.
And, yeah. Well, and I got to believe that Apple's roadmap, you know, if you look out far enough,
yeah,
glasses are on it. You know, it's totally. It's not a...
They're already experimenting with it. They just aren't anywhere close to productizing it.
Right. You know, whereas Google likes to, you know, we've talked about this before, how Google does all of their, you know, product development versus Apple does. They throw everything against the wall. But yeah, they do it all in public. They do it like it was a website where it's like you just kind of review, you go on the fly. Everything's updatable by the minute. You experiment with a bunch of different stuff. They're much more analytical and scientific, whereas Apple's all driven around, you know, long-term product cycles like they were a car company. And it works for both of them, and they both come up with cool products because of it, but it's so different that it's hard to really judge, you know, you know, the roadmap of one versus the other. You should say Google's roadmap is obvious because you can see it. There's everything that's on their roadmap is in front of your face. You know, like, I mean, it doesn't go any deeper than what it is. I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I had a long conversation with a friend of mine about that last week. Just, you know, they're working for a company where they're dealing with customers, Apple versus selling Apple products versus Android products. And they were talking to an expert and talking about, like, you know, what comes next, what's down the road. And the expert was like, well, just kind of pay attention to what what all of this means. And he was, you know, where everything's going, what the development's like. And he made the comment, he goes, which I think if you like look at the progression, you see the screens of the Android phones getting bigger, which I think that's what that means. And I was like, no, you're talking to an Apple expert. You need to understand the difference between the two companies and how they develop things. Now, that doesn't mean that Apple's not coming up with a bigger phone. And like I've said a million times, they make bigger phones every year. Every year they come up with a large screen iPhone. And they do a certain test run of them, and they try them out. And for whatever reason, every single year, they decide not to do it this year.
Yep.
And you know, so the idea – there was another – There was another article out just today. Apple's done – you know, is designing – they were talking about how Apple is building a – it was like a 4.7 and a 5.5-inch phone. So like two huge phones, and they're like, so that means that Apple's gonna have two sized phones. They're like, no, that's not what that means. That means that Apple is trying both of them and is going to pick one of them. Come on, this is easy.
Or neither.
Or neither, right?
Yeah.
You know, and or those are the two sizes you've heard of above and beyond the other ones that are in the pipeline. So I don't know, you know, but. That's why it's so cool. Apple is crazy, man. They have spent so much money. They've done like it's crazy. It's like they've bought like two companies every month for like the last 6 months. And you know, they're investing, man. They're definitely on the move. And I just love the fact that you don't know where they're going. Come on, guys. I wonder how many times they invest in dead ends and we just forget about it because it was a dead end and kind of they made the investment 2 years ago and it didn't pan out. It'd be interesting to look
back. HP does that. So you know they do it.
Yeah, I'm sure it happens. I feel like it's more obvious with other companies when they accidentally invest in a dead end than when Apple does it because they're so secretive.
This is awesome. There was another company recently that invested in a dead end. And is shutting it down. I don't remember. 2 years ago. Here we go. 2 years ago. Dish Network decided to invest in Blockbuster to try to save their stores. And just as we talked about, it was a dead end.
Yeah.
It's the ending credits. It's finished. There is no teaser at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
They're done.
I was watching. Or I was listening to what's his name? Jimmy Fallon straight up stole a joke from Comedy Central or from Saturday Night Live when they did the exact same joke when the first round of Blockbuster closures happened, and he pulls out the old VHS. Looks like I win this round, Blockbuster.
Nice.
Oh man, yeah, it's over. Actually, and it's funny, it's not completely over. There are some Blockbusters that are going to stay open. You know which ones?
The franchisees don't have to give it up yet.
Well, and it's specifically, like, every single one, every single Blockbuster in Alaska is going to stay open. Because there's like, classic, nothing to do there, and there's no internet service, so they don't get Netflix. It's their only chance.
Apparently. Wow.
But.
Yeah. So they're, that's that, huh?
That's it, man.
Another point for Netflix.
Yeah, seriously.
I guess I will admit, so there's a small part of me that is sad, because there was a movie that we wanted to watch, wasn't available on Netflix, not available on iTunes or Amazon, or there was not a digital form. We could have bought the movie on Amazon, I suppose, in a DVD, but on a whim, Jesse went into a Blockbuster and was like, I know you don't have it, but I got to ask anyways. Do you got it? They're like, oh yeah, we do.
What movie was it?
It was a Tom Hanks, The Money Pit.
Oh.
Which we watched after we finished all of our fixes.
That's probably good.
yeah. And they were like, yeah, it's 99 cents. Jesse, she was like, how in the world do you make money?
They don't. That's the problem.
For a buck, it costs you more to rent this to me than you're going to get back to it, because of how long it took to do the whole process and your wages. Jeez.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's why they're going bankrupt. And in a nutshell. So, yeah, so they're going to shut down their stores. Like you said, the franchisees will still be open. It doesn't mean it's the end of the video rental service, just like when Tower Record went under. You know, you could still go to music stores. It just means that the chances of seeing a, you know, video rental only type place is very slim. I was reading this article in Bloomberg Business Week that was just talking about how companies are trying different things. Like this one, they're doing like they're opening up a pizza shop inside. Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea is dinner and a movie, and, you know, so they're going to hook you with the pizzas, and then you'll, what the heck, let's get a DVD while we're here. Another one is they're literally like, we put all of the DVDs and we put them in the basement and we turn the upstairs spot into a bar. And so, you know, so that, which I'm like, yeah, that's not really a DVD rental place anymore. That's just like, we weren't able to fully let go.
Right. I will tell you this. One of the greatest things that I've ever experienced from an entertainment perspective was, now that I'm living where I am, I can order delivery pizza. And sitting down to watch an episode of Breaking Bad and ordering pizza to be delivered and having it get there before the end of the first episode of Breaking Bad, and then eating pizza and drinking soda while watching the second episode of Breaking Bad might be one of the greatest experiences of entertainment I've ever had. I mean, it was just fantastic.
It's funny. We could probably do that too, and I just don't even think about it because we never did it as kids.
Yeah,
and
see,
it's not to say, just for you listeners, it's not that our parents were horrible. It literally was because of where we lived. They wouldn't deliver it to us because they couldn't meet the 10-minute time thing.
Yeah, so we couldn't meet the 30-minute time thing was the real problem. We lived too far from the nearest pizza place, which is fine because it introduced us to the greatest pizza on planet Earth. And given my choice, I'd still get Take and Bake from Nono's than delivery from anywhere else. But
that is N-O-N-N-O apostrophe S. For those of you who want to look it up, that's free advertising. It will always be free. You're welcome, Ralph.
Exactly. And I was
the owner and an awesome guy.
It's true. And I would, given the choice between delivery and Nono's, I'm always going to go for Nono's. But now that Nono's is a decade away from me, it's Especially when I want pizza. It's way too far. So I'd have to drive there.
So we're coming down to visit at an indiscriminate time, so you'll never know. Wow. It's definitely not during the Thanksgiving holiday. And Jesse was like, we're going to Nono's, right? At some point in time.
Yeah.
All right. I got a convert. I love it. It's awesome. But anyways, yeah. So Blockbuster, done. We got time. If you could do the last two, you know, at a reasonable pace, that'd be awesome.
So this one's pretty cool. Breakthrough and wireless power collection. Basically, some dudes, was it MIT? Was it someone? Someone from somewhere. Some one of those like smart
Duke.
Groups. Duke.
ECUD.
Duke. Basically, they came up with this cool setup that they really haven't disclosed yet. I read around and I couldn't find it easily. I should say this article was terrible. So like, it's this cool thing that they do. But basically, they're claiming that they can collect power from Wi-Fi at the same efficiency as light from solar panels. So they're basically as efficient as solar panels. Well, it's amazing, except that the actual power output from Wi-Fi is tremendously lower than the power output from the sun. So you're not talking about a lot of electricity, but it's a really great step in the right direction for a number of reasons.
It's a way to recapture energy. That's cool.
Number one, it's a way to recapture energy that's already out there. Number two, Wi-Fi is viewed as generally safe, so it's like if we were to start pumping out some really high-power Wi-Fi means of energy dissemination, that's good.
How awesome would that be?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not doing it for the for the network. I'm doing it for my energy over here.
Exactly. And it's already
bring
you know,
a
it's
new
already
definition to sucking Wi-Fi from your neighbors.
It's true. It's good for a number of reasons. Just trying to get it back into the industry. Yeah, it's already a very well thought of technology. But what's really cool is they're like, yeah, this can totally be tuned to other wavelengths and other things. They're like, basically, we can do this with a bunch of different radio wave lengths. There's no reason we need to stick with just Wi-Fi. We can go, you know, maybe we can go cellular. Maybe we can go with something with a bigger range or something that has a much shorter range. Like, because to me, it's like I would be as useful to say something that can only transmit in the room, but is much more energetic. Because it's like one of the reasons is as you get like longer wavelengths, they tend to pass through things more easily. So if you get something that's really energetic with a really high – something with a lot of power and it's got a really wide, long wavelength, that's way more dangerous than something with a short wavelength at the same energy
level. Like a microwave?
The example would be an alpha particle versus a gamma particle from your nuclear explosions, because gamma radiation – is terrible because it'll pass right through you and knocks all your – that's actually what melts you from the inside, whereas the alpha and beta is what melts you from
the outside. Or turns
you
into a monster.
Yes. Not normally.
It could happen.
It just kills you. That's generally what happens.
Most of the time.
99.9999% of the time.
There are documented cases where it either A, turns you into a super soldier, or B, a freak.
It's true. Or sometimes.
Only when you're angry.
And sometimes into a giant dinosaur.
Yeah, that could happen.
That has happened before. Japan.
It's documented. They have video proof.
Yeah.
Video proof.
Pretty video proof. And it's
rather well cut, I might add.
It's nice. So what's cool about this is that it's Wi-Fi is an incredibly short wavelength, so you can get it pretty energetic and not do a lot of damage to humans, which is cool. But it's like if you were to put something really short wavelength in a room so that you could power screens without all the wiring, now that would be awesome. Or just, you know, so you put it into each individual room to charge rooms as on their own. Everybody likes to think about this.
I see what you just did there.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody likes to think about this as like you put up a giant, you know, radio tower in the middle of your community, and you charge everybody's phones everywhere. Like, that's not what I want. I don't want the cellular of energy. What I want is I want to be able to put a screen on my wall, not have any power, and not have any data lines. I want it just to display the image, and I can watch TV. I just put it up, watch TV. I just put it down, connect to my Mac Mini, and it all runs off of nothing, no wires anywhere. All your powder, all your data, it's all wirelessly done and out. And that's eventually where you get with all this, which would be really, really cool. So get on it, everybody.
Yeah.
And this is another step in that direction.
That's cool.
Is it going to be a sellable technology? Who knows? But it's, you know, we're staying down that direction. And then the last thing, this one's pretty cool. Organovo, they made a liver. They
great
printed
name.
It. Yeah, they printed it with a 3D printer. And they made it with stem cells so that if they were to actually put it inside of somebody, it wouldn't be rejected because it's your DNA, dino DNA. And what's really cool about this is it survived for 40 days. And why didn't it survive longer than 40 days? It's because they're not very good at printing circulatory systems yet, which makes it really hard to deliver all the necessary nutrients.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing where, you know, at 40 days, that just, you know, if that buys you time before you can get a real transplant, I mean, that's huge.
Well, and the other – there's two reasons here. There's two things that you can do with this as it stands. Number one, it's great for drug trial research because you can see what's absorbed. You can say, how will this medication affect your liver? And which would be huge.
Oh, your liver. Yeah, okay.
Because it's yours. I mean, it's the same DNA,
same
cells. And then the other thing that you can do with it, which is also a really big deal, is you can theoretically make like sheets of liver that you can just sort of like graft into your liver. So, you know, obviously the liver regenerates itself, but you need like half a liver to really get there. But it would be really cool if you could like sit there and go, okay, we're going to take your liver, we're going to cut it in half, we're going to transplant this liver into somebody else, and then we're going to take your liver and we're going to make like another third of a liver, and we're going to graft that onto the liver that already exists, and they're all going to kind of become one, and it's going to grow its own cardiovascular system. So there's a lot of things that people are trying to figure out how to do with, but the fact of the matter is that they're growing livers, and the only limitation to being able to create full-bone livers that matches you is being able to build a cardiovascular system. And it actually sent me on this cool like daisy chain of information, reading experts and stuff. I guess this is the big thing. This is what's stopping us from being able to do full blown, like we're creating livers are the easy one, but hearts, lungs, muscles,
totally.
Stomachs, pancreases, throats, all of that, it's all about the blood. How do you design something that intricate?
Whoa.
And the thing
that sounds
is,
hard. That
it
sounds
is very
hard.
Hard. It is very hard, but this is the thing. It's not impossible. And a lot of it has to do with just like, you know, getting all of the different materials with the correct, you know, finite movements down right. And it's one of those things where it's like there's no theoretical reason we can't do it. It's just limitations on technology that keeps getting better. And this is like, and the reason why it lasts 40 days is because they're getting better at building this kind of stuff. But eventually it gets to the point, maybe in our lifetimes, that you need a new brain, don't worry about it. We'll grow you a new one. I don't think that's going to be like the one that doesn't work. But everything else.
That would be...
You need a new
impressive.
Eyeball? Okay, we'll grow you a new eyeball. You need a new – I don't know. That one might be difficult too, but I don't really know. I'm getting excited now. But definitely like, you know, definitely you have a heart attack, your heart's half dead. Don't worry about
heart
it.
Huge.
Yeah. And then we don't have to do things like The Island, that one movie with those two pretty people.
Which, by the way, that movie
Obi-Wan
totally
Kenobi
worked on me.
What?
Because I hadn't – Jesse and I, I think it was on Netflix, we didn't know anything about it. Didn't look at a trailer, nothing. I was like, oh, that looks cool. Yeah. I like him. Let's watch it. So we had no clue what it was getting into it. It was awesome.
Obi-Wan Kenobi and Black
anything.
Widow were
highly recommend
the two main
it.
Characters.
Is that who it was?
Which one are you talking about?
Yeah, The Island.
All right, wait.
I didn't think it was Scarlett Johansson.
Which one are you talking about? Who's the main character?
Yeah, it had Obi-Wan Kenobi, whatever his name is.
Oh, I can't think of it.
I know what you're talking about. The island where they were. Yeah.
Wait. Let me make sure I'm talking about the right movie. Give me one
you
second.
You totally are. This is hard to do without any spoilers.
I know. It really is.
That involved organ growing.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's
You got the girl wrong.
No, it's the right girl. Black Widow.
Really?
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. Right? ScarJo. Huh.
Whatever. Cool. Anyways.
Yeah, so...
It's a good movie. You know, I recommend it if you haven't seen it. Don't look at any trailers. Just watch it.
I won't, yeah. I won't ruin it for you any more than I already have. So, you don't have to do that whole song and dance, which is cool. You just grow stuff. Now, you know, the question...
That is cool. That's very cool. Is it relatively... they're not even talking about costs yet, huh?
No, it's not even worth talking about costs on this sort of thing because it's ridiculously expensive and it's a complete money well.
It's still experimental. Yeah.
Exactly. But the thing is, though, it's like one of the big reasons why it's still being used is because it's financially advantageous to, you know, drug companies because they can see how medication, how heart cells actually respond to medication, how... You know,
that's cool.
Liver cells, how lung cells, how they can check human tissue to make sure, instead of just hoping that pigs and monkeys and mice are close enough approximations, we can actually see how it affects humans. And eventually, if we get really good at this, you can see how the medication is going to affect you before we even inject it, which is really exciting. So, very cool. I like it.
That's awesome. I like it a lot. That's cool, man. Science and technology are very cool. And biotech is really the next big field, and I'm super happy to see companies making a lot of headway on that. It's going to be huge.
Yes, sir.
Huge. I want them to learn a lot in like the next 30 years. That's about my time frame. Afterwards, I start to care less. But that's okay. Cool. Hey, awesome show, man. That was a lot of fun. A lot of cool stuff happening. That was cool. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my godlike brother on Tuesday is Matthew Furlow.
I avoided that comparison because I didn't want any of us to get struck by lightning, okay? But I appreciate
We're good.
You're welcome. I live in California. We never get rain here, so we're fine.
And his name is Matthew Furlow.
Yeah,
Matthew Furlow. On that note, we will talk next time. Good show.
That was a good show.
Oh, man. I need to get less sleep more often. That worked out well.